You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
We're gonna be okay. Like, we're gonna be fine. Like, I'm gonna make sure of it. We're gonna be fine. Brad's gonna make sure of it. Our teammates gonna make sure of it. But, like, we're gonna be okay no matter what's going on out there. And I think that just comes with trust over time of just what we got going here.
That's Kyrie Irving post game after the Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns 116-109 in overtime. Thank you, NBC Sports Boston, for the audio on that one. And thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Happy Friday, everybody. This is the Locked On Celtics Friday podcast. And I am John Corrales of the Raining Jays, here solo for at least a couple of segments. And then later on, David Locke of the Locked On Jazz and the Locked On Podcast Network joins me to talk about the Utah game. We're going to preview Utah and Gordon Hayward's return. Really, that's what we're going to talk about later on. But first, two segments here on this, the good and the bad. We've got two very distinct games to talk about in this one game that the Celtics played in Phoenix. There is the good, and then there is the bad. And the bad was very bad. The good was very good. So let's just get into that. The good was the comeback. The Celtics came back from as many as 22 points down. They outscored the Phoenix Suns 40-17 over the final 11 minutes, and they outscored the Phoenix Suns 81-54 after the half. So that tells you how bad the first half was. That first half was just a disgusting mess. We'll talk about the mess in the specificity of that, but the Celtics were down 20 at halftime. Kyrie Irving led the comeback. I mean, really, it starts with Kyrie Irving, who in the fourth quarter in overtime had 18 points on 7 of 13 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3, a couple of free throws, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 rebounds, and a block. Kyrie Irving in the fourth quarter in overtime was amazing. That was just some of the most ridiculous basketball I've seen. The shots that he was making, the plays that he was making, steals, passes, the game winner, or I'm sorry, the game tying shot from Marcus Morris. So Marcus Morris gets a shot, hits a three to tie the game with 0.3 left on an out of bounds play that started with Kyrie Irving way in the backcourt. So the inbound got into Marcus Morris at the top of the key. If you didn't see this, Kyrie Irving comes streaking down, and so Morris gets him the ball. And two defenders go with Kyrie Irving. And Irving turns around and gives it to Marcus Morris, and he takes the shot. And he can tell right away. He knew it was in before the ball went in. So, but that the fact that Kyrie passed in that situation was amazing. That is part of, I think, the maturation, the next step in Kyrie Irving's superstardom. If you want to go down that road, I thought that he was just insane and making all the right plays, not just scoring and hitting ridiculous shots, plenty of ridiculous shots. He was making the right plays. And I just, more than some of the things that he's done in the past, I think the defensive intensity has been pretty good for most of the early part of the season from Kyrie Irving. There have been stretches that it was bad. It was not good in the Indiana game at all, like throughout the whole game. But mostly, it's been pretty good for him. And tonight, that was very indicative down the stretch. Also good, Jaylen Brown's second half. Jaylen Brown had a terrible first half, but Jaylen Brown in the second half was pretty good. And I think that the two transition opportunities early on helped Jaylen Brown get going. Came out of halftime, they had a steal, a breakaway, and he got a dunk. And then they had another breakaway, and he got fouled, and he got two free throws. And all of a sudden, Jaylen Brown is getting going and getting some confidence, and he's seeing the ball go through the hoop, and he's getting into his groove. And then in the second half, he scores 17 points on 6 of 8 field goals, a three-pointer, 4 of 6 from the line, 5 rebounds, and an assist. Now, the 2 missed free throws came on one trip. That wasn't great. But Jaylen Brown, in the second half, proves what I've been saying all along with the pod, with the podcast here, and what's been plaguing the Celtics. If you go out and you try too hard to get your own individual opportunities, like Jaylen Brown did in the first half, and I don't want to dive into the bad that's coming up next, but in the first half, he did try too hard to get his own opportunities, a lot of isolation, multiple dribbles into fadeaway shots and whatever. If you just play defense and you get out on the break and you get a couple of baskets, then things start to fall. When you try too hard, it won't work. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who I'll get to later, biggest culprit so far this season. And part of it is, in their heads, they know that they're better than most of the guys in front of them trying to defend them. But when they try too hard to get individual baskets, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So Jaylen Brown gets out there on the break. He gets 4 easy points right away in the second quarter. And then next thing you know, he has a great second half. That's it. That's all it takes. That's all it takes. So Boston Celtics come back. Kyrie was awesome. The Celtics were just hitting a ton of shots. The Celtics in the second half were 20 in the second half in overtime, 29 of 51. So they shot 57% in the second half in overtime. They shot 48% from three, and they shot 12 of 18 from the line. Not great from the line, but they got 18 free throws. 18 free throws, guys. This is where if I was not lazy right now, I would do the hallelujah chorus in there. But that's exactly what you want out of this team. Marcus Morris in the second half, 11 points, 4 of 7 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3, 5 rebounds. It just the second half, and a lot of this comes down to making and missing, you know, the make-miss league stuff. The Celtics missed, my God, the first quarter, they missed so many easy shots. The Celtics came into this game shooting less than 41% on wide open shots, which is defined as a defender more than 6 feet away. Wide open shots. And they are the 11th worst team. So there are 10 teams that are worse than them on wide open shots. The Warriors shoot like 54% on wide open shots. So the Celtics started this game by just missing everything. I mean, the first half, well, let me get to that in a minute. The fact that the Celtics started making shots in the second half kind of helped in the overtime. Man, they just were out of their minds in the overtime. The Celtics shot 6 of 9 in the overtime, 2 of 4 from three. They scored 16 points in the overtime. 16 points in overtime. They scored 13 points in the first quarter. 12 minutes in the first quarter, they scored 13 points. 5 minutes of overtime, they scored 16 points. That gives you the contrast. This is why we're breaking this up into two segments. So that's the good. And I don't want to go too crazy about the good because the good came late. But you got to, when you're down 22 and down by, I forget what it was late in the fourth quarter. I think it was like 18 or 16 in the fourth quarter. And you come back against anybody. That's impressive. But they came back mostly because it's the Suns. And they, if this was any other team, minus maybe like two or three, if this was a halfway decent team, they would have lost this game by 30. So the fact that they came back and won, impressive. It came against the Suns. Okay, yeah. Yeah, but we'll take it. You take any time you win, you take it and you can move on. Except we're not going to exactly move on. I'm going to get into the bad, and the bad was bad. The bad was very bad. Before I get into the bad, I want to remind everybody that the Locked On NBA Network has a couple of great social outlets. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter, Locked On NBA Net on Instagram. The Twitter account is a full list. It's basically every Locked On Celtics host is on that account. And during games, it gets wild because it's just everything. And you get to basically be part of all of the action just through that Twitter account. So Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. It's every Locked On host on that one Twitter feed. So you get this super awesome Twitter feed that gets you in the game and gets you very immersed on Twitter all day long. On Instagram, you get snippets from all of the podcast hosts from different podcasts, the big ones of the day. And so there's just a lot on the Instagram that it just gives you a little taste of what the podcasts are like. So follow both and check it out. It's a pretty fun follow on both. And if I wasn't even a Locked On host, I would definitely be following those, especially Instagram, because you get just these little tastes of the podcast and you can go sample one that you are interested in. So follow Locked On NBA Net on Instagram and on Twitter. Okay, let's get to the bad. And I'm glad that the bad came early on and it could be the second segment. I didn't have to start with this. But the Celtics, so it's very predictable what the Celtics do. The Celtics come out and they try to do the right thing. And the Celtics in the first quarter, early on, generated a lot of good looks. I mean, that Celtics offense wasn't too bad in the first quarter. They did everything right except for making shots. And it was brutal to watch them miss shots. Kyrie hit the first shot of the game for the Celtics. Then they missed 12 in a row. 12 shots in a row. And every one of those 12 shots was a good shot. All of them. They got down 22-8 early. And that was just a function of them missing makeable shots. And like I said before, the Celtics struggle, I guess, and it's weird that they struggle. They've got a bunch of guys who can shoot. Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford, Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown. Who don't you trust to make an open shot? If I said, there's somebody's got a gun to your head and you got to pick one of these guys to hit an open shot, basically any one of those guys, you'd say, okay, I'm good. This is going to be good. They're going to hit an open shot. Except they don't. They struggle with the open shots. They got wide open look after wide open look after wide open look in the first quarter, and they missed. Okay, fine. Fine. That happens. What I hate is when the Celtics just give up on what's gotten them the open looks. They get frustrated with the misses and they start feeling sorry for themselves. And then they start lagging on defense and then they get back late. And then the Celtics start overreacting on defense because somebody's back late or they're preoccupied with their misses. And then I saw player after player after player with the Celtics just flying out trying to close out on a three-point shooter because they allowed penetration. And then somebody was wide open in the perimeter, and then they flew out against that shooter and jumped on a fake and then flew way past that shooter. And then that shooter either just sidestepped and took a three or drove and kicked. It's just a predictable mess. When the Celtics get down on themselves for misses, they will either get back on defense late and that'll happen, or they devolve into their individual play, which the Celtics did time and time again. And Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the first half were both very, very guilty of this. Most of the guys on the team were guilty of this, but those two guys in particular were very guilty. And what happens, like I always say, they take 5, 6, 7, 8 dribbles. They launch into a fadeaway contested shot. The rebound goes long. It gets a break opportunity for the other team, and then they score. It happens every game, and I keep saying it, and then the next game, it keeps happening again. Now, in this game, Jason Tatum didn't start the second half. He came in later and played a little bit better, but he did not have a great game at all. I mean, he didn't have a good game at all. The funny thing, so here are his numbers. 4 points on 1 of 7 shooting, missed 1 3, 8 rebounds. He leads the Celtics in rebounding. Couple of assists, a steal. He was a plus 15, best on the team, plus 15. Because he was on the floor when Kyrie Irving was doing all of his crazy stuff. And so Tatum, you got to take these plus minus with a grain of salt. You can't just look at without seeing the game. That plus 15 is completely fake with Jason Tatum. He did not have a positive impact for most of this game. He just didn't. It just was not a good game for him at all. And there was a stretch there where I just wondered if he was even going to get back into the game. And a lot of people on Twitter are asking whether he should even be benched or come off the bench anyway. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Jason Tatum. I keep joking that he's got Kobe brain. It's not a joke anymore, really. I'm really starting to think that he is infected with Kobe brain. And that workout, like at this point, I'm desperate to figure out what was said at that workout. I don't know what was said at that workout that got into his head that he's been infected with these. He's taking the same spin, baseline, fadeaway Kobe Bryant shot. Just stop taking that shot. You're not Kobe. I know you want to be Kobe. You're not Kobe. And you know what? We don't want you to be Kobe because the secret about Kobe is that he was not an efficient scorer. Don't be Kobe. Be Tatum. And I know that being Tatum means taking some mid-range jumpers, and I'm fine with that. But take the catch-and-shoot threes, drive, and if it's not there, then kick it. Trust that the ball will come back to you. How many times do I have to say this on the podcast? Trust that the ball will come back to you. Work the ball around. If you trust, just trust that the ball will find the right guy, then we'll be okay as an offense. And it's hard to understand that sometimes. But when an offense is run correctly, when the ball is moving, when you get penetration, when you get driving kicks, when you get the paint touches, when you get that ball side to side, it will find the right guy. And it sounds like a cosmic basketball gods thing, but the simple fact is when the defense is put in rotation, somebody along the way on offense is going to see a lane that opens up because a defender made a mistake. And especially against a young team like the Phoenix Suns, they should have been doing this. They should have stuck with it. But against any defense, you get that ball side to side, you get that ball into the paint, you drive and kick, you open up opportunities by creating rotations, and at some point, somebody's going to be a step slow. At some point, somebody's going to make a mistake, and at some point, that ball is going to be in a position where the right guy has it at the right time, and he is going to go score. And it's going to be a different guy each time, and that means every guy's going to get his opportunities. And maybe it's the same guy two, three, four times in a row, but then it's going to be a different guy because the defense is going to overreact to that one guy, and then everybody eats. Everybody gets fed when the ball is doing that. So these guys have to get it in their heads that when the ball moves, a lot like it did in the second half, when the ball moves, the ball will find the right guy. And even if you're missing the open shots, understand that those are open shots and keep taking them. Just keep taking them. You'll hit them eventually. They're all good shooters. I don't want to dwell on too much because a lot of the problems are the same problems. All of my notes are the same notes. A lot of the same things. It's interesting that Gordon Hayward didn't finish the game. In fact, I don't think that Gordon Hayward played in the overtime. Let me just double check that. Nope, he did not play in the overtime. And he played 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. I think that's due to the minutes restriction. And I think that's very important to him to play in that Utah game. So I think they went with that minutes restriction. Because he played overall 25 minutes in the game. So that, I think, was basically the upper end of what they were going to play him. And that they could have put him in later on, but they just kind of rolled, especially when the Celtics were rolling in the overtime. I think that's why he didn't play. So he wants to play against Utah. I think he wants to do well against Utah. So we'll see. I don't have any other notes on any other players. I think that's about it with this game. Look, if the Celtics had lost this game, it would have been a very, very, very negative podcast. They managed to come back, which was great. And so we'll just leave it at that. They won. Yeah, it was gross for a lot of it. They need to fix these problems. It's the same problems. I'm not going to harp on it. I'm not going to just keep repeating myself because I feel like I just keep repeating myself. When we come back, I have a conversation with David Locke, speaking of Gordon Hayward, about Hayward and his return to Utah, what to expect, and why Utah is still so pissed off about Gordon Hayward and his departure from Utah. But before we get to that, please subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Podcast. If you are a fantasy basketball player, Josh Lloyd and Locked On Fantasy does a great job breaking everything down. If you need an advantage in your fantasy league, if you are struggling, then you got to listen to Locked On Fantasy to get yourself back on track. Get to the top of your league. If you're at the top, stay on top with the Locked On Fantasy Podcast. It's just a complete breakdown, an awesome podcast, and just a great show. You should absolutely listen to Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd, Locked On Fantasy NBA with Josh Lloyd. Go find that wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's bring in the authority on the Utah Jazz. He is the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast. And funny, let's see, Locked On, David Locke. You're the guy. You're that guy.
I was talking to someone last night. I said, I wish my last name wasn't Locke because Locked On is such a great name for the whole network. And as it's emerged and built out to what it is now, I wish my name wasn't on it. I just wish I had a different name because I do wish it was called Locked On. I just wish it wasn't my name. It's too arrogant. I didn't mean it that way. It just kind of happened.
Hey, look, if my name was Locke, I would have named my podcast Locked On. You just had the vision to create a whole network out of it. Right. So, you know, hey, that's it. That's how it goes.
I didn't know to change my name first.
Right, right. Like Corrales just on network doesn't work. So,
right.
You know, that's my own dumb luck. But so the last section of this podcast here is a sort of preview to the game in Utah. Obviously, this is a huge one because Gordon Hayward goes back to Utah for the first time. So I really want to get your sense on how this is going to go. How is he going to be received? What is he in for, like, the moment he walks in the building?
I think people could arrive early just to make sure he feels them the whole time.
Really?
Yeah, this exit was not pretty. It was done. It was painful to Utah where they really had never had it happen before. Like, that's the big misnomer everyone talks about. Well, Utah can't keep a star, except for Stockton and Malone stayed forever, and they traded Darren Williams.
Right.
And they let Boozer go. So they had never had it happen before. And for whatever reason, there was a feeling that Gordon would stay. I don't know why, but there was that feeling. And then I'll be honest, and I like Gordon and got along with him really well. I haven't talked to him at all since, which is pretty much par for the course with everybody since he left. He really cut ties pretty severely. He did it terribly.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying this because I'm bitter. I mean, I can document it. But his players, his false, I'm not – in words out, he's leaving. He then goes through this whole shenanigans for 5 hours, which really feels as though it was, in the opinion of most Jazz fans and frankly myself, it was just so he could get his Players Tribune article out. Like, he got scooped on his own story, and then at least my feeling is that he was pretty disingenuous in his I'm second-guessing my decision, which I don't know if Celtic fans remember that, but that was a really big 5 hours here.
Oh, we remember.
That added a lot of salt to the wound. Like, if it had just come out at noon and been like, that's the decision, I think it could have been. And then if the Players Tribune article had actually decided to mention one teammate, that might have been nice. I mean, he only played here for 7 years, so I guess he didn't have a teammate he needed to mention. Or, you know, thank anyone in the organization, that could have been nice. He didn't make any of the usual phone calls that most people make. He didn't do any of the things that many of the other free agents have done when they left a city, which often are classified as disingenuous, but at least there's something. And then honestly, the one that got my ire, but I don't think bothered the Jazz fans much, was, if you recall, he talked to the media when Utah played in Boston last year, and he just didn't do it well. I just actually, that was the day I was disappointed in him, where I was just like, that's not hard. Like, just now. He has a quote from Jay in an Athletic story this week that's the first time I've ever seen him say, like, oh, I, like, really appreciate Utah and excited to go back and play there. So he had really been – he just had not done – and whether the – you know, maybe he was really bitter and mad and wanted to get out, and he was sour for all we know. Maybe there was something that really bothered him. I don't know. But he didn't deal with this in a manner that showed any – feeling back to the Jazz fans of thank you, appreciate the time, appreciate the support.
It's almost like when there's a breakup, like, there are certain things you have to do to make it a good breakup. And even if some of it, like you said, disingenuous, but it's the just the notion that he made this offer, like, he made this gesture that said, okay, thank you. Even if he doesn't mean thank you, even if he's trying to get the hell out as fast as possible, he says, you know, thank you, take out the full page ad and say, you know, I'm off. Bye. Did he take out the full page ad? Did he do any of that stuff?
No, he didn't do any of it. So I think that's why this is going to happen. There's going to be, like, I'd love to try to do something right now where I say, oh, there'll be, I just don't think that's going to be there. Like, I just don't think there's going to, I don't know if there'll be a tribute video. I don't know that there'll be any, like, fans standing and cheering him at all. I think it'll be Durant to OKC similar, and maybe with a little bit more venom.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be tough.
I feel,
and I don't know if that, and I don't know if that's right. Like, I will say this. I think he I know what he wanted. He wanted, and it's been very obvious. He there was one item on his teeter totter, in my opinion, and I feel comfortable with this. He wanted to change his national place, exposure in the league,
mm-hmm.
and where he resonated. And he could do that in Boston in a way he couldn't do it in Utah. He could do it in the East in a way he couldn't do it in the West. And he was right. Like, that opening night where he breaks his ankle against Cleveland is on the national schedule prior to Kyrie Irving trade.
Right.
Right? So right. That's Gordon Hayward is bringing Boston to go compete, and he's the first game of the NBA season. And what did you guys have last year? 22 games on ESPN?
Yeah, something ridiculous. Like
that lot, schedule was made before Kyrie trade.
Right. Right.
So that's Gordon was absolutely right. He's done, and he's and the same guy who, when he won Player of the Week, wouldn't do a pregame interview, is now doing the Today Show, Barstool Sports,
right,
Athletic TV show. Like, that's what he wants.
He is an interesting guy. It's because he seems like very quiet and to himself. Like, he just seems like the guy, he goes home, he puts on his headset, he starts gaming. Like, he's not like a big personality. At the same time, he's constantly putting out these workout videos. He's constantly putting out these things that draw attention to himself. He's marketing himself, which I do not blame any player at all for marketing themselves. I've been pro marketing yourself. I'm pro player. You've got a small window of 10 to 15 years, if you're great, to make as much money as you possibly can. And that's supposed to kind of last you the rest of your life and set your kids up, the next generation. So when you're Gordon Hayward and you have an opportunity to make a ton of money and market yourself and get more money, then you do it. It's just interesting how he does it. How did his
Barstool Sports quotes go over where he talked about how he basically almost rooted for the team to lose because the winning streak made him feel irrelevant, which was really an honest comment. I mean,
it's very honest. Nothing really came of it. I didn't listen to any of the Boston Sports Talk radio to see if that really went off, but I didn't see any people tweeting about it. I think everybody understood. And
that was a really honest comment.
Sure. Like, we talked about it on the podcast. I can see when you are suddenly removed from a situation, like you have your own ego that says, okay, that they're doing great. Like, if for some reason I got laryngitis and I had to get off Lockdown Celtics for 3 weeks and the numbers boomed. Like, all of a sudden we're getting 25% boost in all the numbers. I'd be like, oh, okay. So I guess
I don't love it when you and Jake's Lockdown NBA's got more listens than mine on a Thursday. It pisses me off.
Yeah. Look, it's a competitive nature. Wow. We do get some, well, that's an interesting number. Okay.
Never happened actually.
No, but seriously, it's there's a competitiveness that drives these guys. There's a thing inside everybody's head that says, I'm here to be the man. I'm
absolutely,
I have this ego, and you expect like something to fall apart. Like, if you think you're the best and you're not on the team anymore, and your expectation is, okay, they're going to struggle for a little while, I hope they get it together.
Well, honestly, my reaction that nobody else had was, wow, if he was rooting against the Celtics, what must he have been doing to the Jazz? You know, I used to say this about Gordon all the time. And again, and I don't know how I'm coming across here. I don't have a problem with him having one item on his teeter-totter. I think that's totally fine. At one point in my career, I left Salt Lake City to go to Seattle. So and I came back, you know, and I came back at a later time in my career. So I don't begrudge him for leaving. I don't think he left well. I would tell I will tell that to his face if he asked me on Friday. Like, dude, why are you being harsh? Because you left terribly.
Right.
You didn't do any of the things you should have done on the way out the door. You left terribly. And it was too bad because, you know, if nothing, I mean, minor stuff. But like, the Jazz had a masseuse and a trainer in San Diego for him living there up to July 1st. Thank them.
Yeah. Right. No, I get it.
Right? Like, they just gave up months of their lives trying to convince you to stay. You're welcome to go. Thank them.
Right.
So I always said this about Gordon, and I don't mean this critically either. I just think this is truthful. A lot closer to Kobe than Opie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's an interesting, because the perception is the Opie, but
white Indiana kid.
Right. You know,
polite, says the right things, good looking.
Sure.
He is. He is He's a ruthless winner.
Yeah.
He's a ruthless competitor.
The dirty little secret is everybody at that level is. And you can't get to that level if you're not. Even if you've got the talent to be that guy, you can't get to that level if you're not, because it's win at all costs, and the loss eats at you so much. And it's I always say there's a mental kind of defect, something that, look, when I was playing basketball and I said, I'm taking 100 shots today, I take my 100 shots and that's it. And there's something in these guys that says, I'm taking my 100 shots, but you know what? That SOB, that, you know, whoever your rival is, like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, I know he's taking 200, so I can't stop. I can't stop. Or, you know, you're the Kobe Bryant or whomever that flips the gym lights on after a bad game, and you go and you're shooting after the game. Like, that type of stuff is the craziness that drives a player to become that elite level. So you can't be that good. And Gordon Hayward, before the injury, was that good without some ruthlessness in you. So,
you know what's really interesting about him is the public swearing. So he wouldn't get any technical fouls early in his career because his mom told him, like, you can't do that. You can't. Your kid's watching you. And he totally held to it and basically had really never publicly ever been seen swearing very intentionally. So the public swear – I mean, he's really a very different cat, or has revealed a side of him that he did not expose. Well, whichever, you know, he may be the exact same guy.
Sure.
But he's revealed a side of him that's very different in Boston than we ever saw in Utah.
Very interesting. So we don't go too long on this segment. So Gordon Hayward's going to get booed. It's going to be a wild scene. It's not going to be pretty for him. Let's get to the game. The Jazz have been struggling, although they're starting to kind of...
Oh, we still play?
Yeah, it's not just.
Oh, I thought they just
bring back the curtain.
I think there's 18,000 people that are just coming to boo. Oh, I didn't know that they actually were coming. That they bought tickets to go see a game too.
No, they bought tickets to boo. The game is free. That's what that game is going to be.
Okay.
So for the free portion of the night where they actually watch basketball, what can Celtics fans expect from the Utah Jazz, who seem to be struggling?
Yeah, I can't figure out how much they're struggling, how much they played two games without Donovan Mitchell. We don't have anywhere near the depth that you guys have offensively. So when we're missing Donovan, it's a big, big issue. Al Horford has caused, you know, those games were pretty ugly last year. If I remember correctly, like, the game in Boston was horrendously ugly. Gobert and Favors both got hurt, and Udo ends up being kind of the key to the game, and the Jazz win an ugly one in Boston. And then Brad Stevens mucks up the game with a zone defense in Salt Lake City and gets the win. So these are two of the brightest coaches in the league. They've got different matchups that they're trying to exploit. And Boston's got more athleticism. The defensive ability of Boston, I think, will be the item that makes the Celtics superior to Utah on the night. The Jazz will have to have a really, really good shooting night. The one that will be interesting to me, you won't be surprised that I bring this up, but the Jazz have one of the best analytic defenses, where they just do not really give you a lot of shots at the rim, and they don't give you a lot of threes. The Celtics are last in the NBA in taking shots in the restricted area, and I believe they're taking a lot of threes. I think about the third most amount of threes in the league, but because they take no shots at the rim, their shot selection's not great. If they don't get the threes off, because the Jazz defend the three-point line pretty well, I'm curious to see, you know, whether or not they, you know, take where their shots come from in that game. I think that'll be an interesting kind of side angle to this game, because the Jazz do a really, really good job of forcing people out of high percentage shots defensively.
Yeah, that's going to be a concern. I think the one thing that I know gives the Jazz trouble, and you've mentioned it on podcasts before, is that they've got Al Horford, the stretch five, that's going to draw Gobert away from the rim.
So maybe you should bring Hayward off the bench, let Bain start, and then we won't have – though his three-point shooting has obviously vastly improved since the playoffs.
Come on, man. He's our best three-point shooter, man.
That's true. I forgot about that. Never mind. Screwed. Never mind. There's nothing we can do.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting, because normally you don't attack the Jazz because they've got Gobert back there. But I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the Celtics – they came out in that Denver game with a strong attack-the-rim mentality. If they can come out with this with Horford stretching the floor, drive and kick. Maybe Horford has a big game as Gobert kind of gets caught in no man's land.
I just want Jay Crowder to guard Gordon Hayward. That's all I want.
That, I mean, look, they have that history. I don't know if you remember, but when
I do, that's why I said it.
Yeah, that
when the fans cheered Gordon, yep, and Crowder was rightfully
pissed, pissed off, man. I mean, he carries a grudge. He definitely carries a grudge.
Well, it's not even Gordon's fault. Like, no, there's no grudge. Like, that's the most beautiful part about it. There's absolutely no grudge that should be held against Gordon in any way, shape, or form on this. And Jay Crowder is going to be fuming all day long wanting to kick the crap out of Gordon Hayward. And Gordon didn't do anything wrong.
That's going to be so fun to see. I don't know how that's going to go, but that's going to be fun to watch. All right, so we will watch it tomorrow. Friday. This is going to be the Friday podcast. So today, hopefully it goes well. At least it's going to hopefully be a good game. David Locke, thank you for joining us here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
See you, buddy.
Thanks to David Locke. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to all of the new listeners for sampling. And I hope you enjoyed this show. Normally, it's not just me. Normally, Jay King or Sam Packard will be with me. But, you know, circumstances. Sam's off traveling for work. Jay is in Phoenix working on his own stories. So normally it's me and Sam post game, but Sam couldn't make it tonight, so it's just me. So please come back and listen to more of our podcasts. If you are not subscribing yet, subscribe now so you can get those. If you are a subscriber and you haven't given us a 5-star rating, if you haven't given us a good written review, please do so, because that really, really helps. And then share the podcast. When people ask you, what podcast should I listen to? You should say, you should listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network.